Friday, January 15th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Junaid Wafo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, America readies for the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden.
There are a lot of people that are Donald Trump supporters that are madder than a nest of hornets. They're dangerous.
Also ahead, how do you heal an angry, divided nation?
While Biden has continued with the message of unity that he campaigned on, he will face deep challenges to heal an angry, divided nation.
Plus, the World Meteorological Organization warns global temperatures are rising. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the U.S. Americans are getting ready to inaugurate President-elect Joe Biden next week after one of the nation's most contentious elections and a violent assault on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports on the mood of the nation as the United States transitions into its next political phase.
After an unprecedented break-in of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters and funeral of a Capitol police officer, one of five people who died in the riot. Now, unprecedented security for the Biden inauguration January 20th, and a second congressional effort to impeach the outgoing president, Donald Trump. Amid ongoing threats of violence, Seattle resident Don Williams is worried.
There are a lot of people that are Donald Trump supporters that are madder than a nest of hornets. You know, they're dangerous. I don't think they're going away.
He says they're undermining President-elect Joe Biden's efforts to tackle the nation's problems. Sakura Schlegel agrees.
Constantly trying to say he's an illegitimate president. And I mean, that's just the start of his term.
A Cuban immigrant in Miami, Ramon Sanchez, is worried about Biden's progressive politics.
Yo espero desastres económicos, políticos y sociales por una razón sencilla. Es socialista.
But another Miami resident, Eric Castro, hopes Biden is successful.
I hope he does great. He's our president now. So, you know, just as I respect the President Trump, I hope Joe Biden does the best for America. We got to win.
This woman, Maria Isabel Rodriguez, is also hopeful.
Muy contenta, muy feliz, porque pienso que van a haber grandes cambios.
In Santa Monica, California, one man called on Biden to address the nation's pressing problems.
Number one is the virus. You know, we have to do a much better job. You know, we can't keep talking about it. We have to do something about it. They'll do something about it.
And Biden needs to overcome political divisions, say two other men.
I'm hoping that Biden can bring the nation back together. Hoping that he can. There's so much, I guess you could call it political segregation. Yeah. I don't know why.
That's actually
it's very intense.
Amid ongoing threats of violence in Washington, D.C. and around the country, the national mood is somber.
It's a mess. I don't know how they're going to fix it. I hope they can.
Nerves on edge ahead of what is usually a jubilant celebration. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
With President Trump impeached so close to President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration and the trial not taking place before then, what's the impact on American politics moving forward? International Edition's Steve Miller gets that answer and more from Villanova University's political science professor, Matthew Kerbel.
I mean, pretty clearly, this is not the way Joe Biden would choose to come to office. I think new presidents always want a clean break with the past. They want to be able to move their agenda. They want to be able to set that agenda and set priorities in Washington. And to a certain extent, this is going to preclude the new president, Joe Biden, from being able to do that because he will now come into office in the shadow of his immediate predecessor and in the shadow of the events that just transpired in the Capitol. So, you know, to that extent, because this is unprecedented, we really don't know how it's going to play out. But it's pretty clear that the business of the new administration, including confirming the cabinet and moving on some of the items that Biden has said are urgent priorities, will now have to share the stage with an impeachment trial.
What about to the American public? Because some Trump supporters have said by following through on impeachment, it may energize the president's base. Republicans during the debate were saying that this was a divisive process. But Democrats were saying this is our duty. There was an attack on the Capitol. They feel that the president incited the riot, and this is their responsibility.
Yeah, you know, it's very hard to imagine supporters more energized or doing something more divisive than what we've already seen. So, I mean, I think the argument about, that some of the president's supporters are making that we need to move past this. It's honestly a little hard to take that seriously given the magnitude of events that have already transpired. I think if there is going to be an opportunity to move beyond this, it seems that there would need to be an accounting of what happened, who was involved, and to the extent that there were people involved who broke the law, to hold them accountable legally.
What do you see as potential issues for the Republican Party moving forward? Because you had Liz Cheney, the number three Republican in the House, saying that, we must hold the president accountable. 10 Republicans voted for impeachment. The rest did not. So what challenges as a party do you see them facing?
I think it's a big challenge. And as Donald Trump now leaves power, but does not exit the stage, I think the big question for the Republican Party is how much sway does he continue to hold over the party, over the party's strongest supporters? And I think it even raises the question of whether his supporters are the party's strongest supporters. One of the stories that I think has gotten lost in the events of the past week or so is Georgia, where you can make the case that the reason Democrats won both seats in Georgia and consequently won control of the Senate is because of the messaging that came from the president. And, if his voters don't show up to vote for other Republicans, then I think it's an open political question about his value going forward. But on the other hand, because his voters are so loyal to him, it's really not an easy decision for Republicans to make whether they stay with him or whether they abandon him. I would say that some of the signals we've gotten from Mitch McConnell over the past couple of days about his openness to and conviction in the impeachment trial, I think that's telling, because I think that will be a really good indication, at least from the standpoint of, Republicans in government, Republicans in Congress, as to how they're going to navigate this genuine minefield going forward.
That's International Edition's Steve Miller speaking with Villanova University political science professor Matthew Kerbel. In a new CBS YouGovernment poll, 21% of Republicans said they approve of the bloody siege on the U.S. Congress by supporters of President Donald Trump. Many more say they believe that November election was rigged. As the U.S. heads into a turbulent transition of powers, Patsy Widaskwara has the story on this divided and angry nation.
As the president approaches the end of his term, the country is divided. While many scholars draw parallels to the period of the nation's founding and the Civil War, there is one important difference. Vanessa Beasley teaches political communication at Vanderbilt University.
Both of those time periods, who counted as a citizen was almost exclusively just a white man, right? So we think about who the American people are and how that's changed over time. It's also true that history gives us a guide to think about the things that will need to be put in place to make this moment transformative. Clearly a powerful president, powerful in the sense of understanding the symbolism in the office and that it stands for all the American people, is one of the necessary ingredients in this mix.
While Biden has continued with the message of unity that he campaigned on, he will face steep challenges to heal an angry, divided nation. Again, Steve Phillips of Democracy in Color.
It's a very similar moment to post-Civil War. We had major struggles and battles around what is the nature of this country. And then now we're going to set about trying to push an agenda around building a multiracial democracy like we did with Reconstruction. Or are we going to continue to paper over these differences and just try to excuse without coming to terms with the fact that there's profound inequality and injustice in this country.
As the country deals with the vision, inauguration preparations are underway on January 20th. Pasivida Kuswara, VOA News.
Others around the nation are bracing for possible violence tied to the inauguration report.
With less than a week to go before Inauguration Day, federal authorities are on high alert, monitoring individuals potentially planning violent protests.
We've already identified over 200 suspects.
FBI Director Christopher Wray speaking at an inauguration security briefing with Vice President Mike Pence.
We know who you are if you're out there. And FBI agents are coming to find you.
Federal officials tell the Associated Press Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy has approved deploying 21,000 National Guard members to Washington, D.C. to assist with security. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The nation's airlines are stepping up security on flights to Washington ahead of next week's presidential inauguration, including a ban on guns. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Delta, United, Alaska, and American Airlines say passengers flying to the nation's capital will not be allowed to fly with guns checked into their luggage. Other airlines are announcing other steps, like American Airlines banning alcohol on flights to D.C. The FAA's announced a crackdown on violence or threats. Administrator Stephen Dixon reports crew harassment is on the rise.
Both from passengers' refusals to wear masks, and from recent violence at the U.S. Capitol.
Last week, Senator Mitt Romney was heckled on a flight by President Trump supporters who will never fly on Delta again, says an airline spokesman. Alaska Airlines has banned 14 passengers. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
President-elect Joe Biden unveiled a $1.9 trillion coronavirus plan to end, quote, a crisis of deep human suffering, unquote, by speeding up vaccines and pumping out financial help to those struggling with the pandemic's prolonged economic fallout. Biden on Thursday said he hopes his multi-pronged strategy will put the country on the path to recovery by the end of his administration's first 100 days.
The rescue plan also includes immediate relief to Americans hardest hit and most in need. We will finish the job of getting a total of $2,000 in cash relief to people who needed the most. The $600 already appropriated is simply not enough. You just have to choose between paying rent and putting food on the table. We'll also provide more peace of mind for struggling families by extending unemployment insurance beyond the end of March for millions of workers. That means that 18 million Americans currently relying on unemployment benefits while they look for work can count on these checks continuing to be there. Plus, there will be a $400 per week supplement, so people can make ends meet.
A strong shallow earthquake has shaken Indonesia's Sulawesi Island, toppling homes and buildings, triggering landslides and killing at least 34 people. More than 600 people were injured following the magnitude 6.2 quake, which struck just after midnight Friday and sent people fleeing their homes into the darkness. Authorities were still collecting information about the full scale of casualties and damages in the affected areas. There were reports of many people trapped in the rubble of collapsed homes and buildings. Thousands of displaced people were evacuated to temporary shelters. Germany now has more than 2 million confirmed COVID infections since the start of the pandemic. The country's disease control agency said Friday that there were 22,368 newly confirmed cases over the previous 24-hour period, taking the total to 2,958,000. The Robert Koch Institute said there have been 44,944 deaths linked to the coronavirus, an increase of 1,113 in a day. German news agency reported that newspapers carried significantly more death notices during that period until October 2020 than in the previous years. Listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. African health experts have expressed optimism that the expected arrival of about 270 million coronavirus vaccines will help the continent reduce the pandemic's infection and mortality rates. For more, I spoke with Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine in Washington, D.C.
For Africa, is that okay? They're going to be getting these 270 million doses, which is good. But when you look at the details, it doesn't seem that the first doses to get to the arm of individuals will not be until about April to June 2021 this year. So the question is that how many lives could we have saved, or on the other way, how many lives could have been lost before we get this vaccine to the arms of the people? That's number one. Number two is also, not that I'm asking for free stuff, but it's not free. The countries have to purchase them or take loans to purchase them. The problem is that we know that most of a number of these countries are poor or already have a heavy debt burden. So we are hoping that they will know that this is of such a crucial importance that they will muster whatever resources they have, take whatever loan they need to take to purchase these vaccines for the lives of their people.
Another issue people are pointing out is the management of these vaccines, knowing that it requires very cold temperature to maintain its efficacy. Several African countries may lack this, and this would defeat the purpose of purchasing these vaccines. Do you agree?
Definitely a big issue for Africa, you know, the concept of maintaining the cold chain in vaccine transport and its efficacy. That is a big, big issue. I mean, it's not a secret that most of our areas in small cities, in the villages, and there is no electricity. And even in big cities where there's electricity, it is very epileptic, comes and goes off rapidly. So this will definitely make it difficult to store these vaccines. I have always talked about that maybe in future we should be having the freeze-dry formulations. That would be our answer. This therefore calls for urgent action by the authorities to see how in the locations where they will have the vaccines to have some kind of standby generators at those locations where these vaccines will be stored so that the vaccine efficacy can be maintained.
Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine, he spoke with me from Washington, D.C. As Ugandans await the results of Thursday's presidential and parliamentary elections, many Democratic advocates are concerned because President Yoweri Museveni's government has barred most election observers and journalists from monitoring the vote count. For analysis of the situation ahead of the results, VOA's Adam Phillips turned to Joni Carson, who has served as U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs and as U.S. Ambassador to both Uganda and Kenya.
Over the last four presidential elections, there has been a steady uptick in the level of conflict, the level of harassment around those contests. In the last two or three elections, the main presidential opposition candidate, Kisi Besigye, has been harassed, intimidated, and violently assaulted. And there appears to be greater level of pre-election harassment and intimidation than there has been in other elections. And certainly in mid-November of last year, some three dozen people were killed in violence that erupted following Bobi Wine's arrest. And very regrettably, we've also seen a great deal of harassment against a number of the presidential candidates.
And there's been a huge government crackdown on the media, especially social media.
I am aware of the fact that the government has shut down social media. I think that probably the government is concerned about the ability of social media to be used to mobilize support for opposition candidates. I do note that before the government shut down social media, the social media companies had already started to take down a number of sites for sending out misinformation and false information.
Do you think that all these factors will fatally compromise the outcome of the election?
I'm not going to prejudge the outcome of the contest. I will say that it is important that there be election observation, and the most important election observers are domestic observers who represent non-governmental organizations, civil society, religious groups, And it is important that the media be able to see that the elections are both transparent and inclusive and are run with fairness and integrity. It's also extremely important that international organizations like the East African Community, the African Union, the Commonwealth, the European Union, the Carter Center, be allowed to observe and monitor elections.
Any final words for us?
I hope that the country does come out of this. Uganda is a wonderful country with really great people, and I hope that we all get a chance to see what the people actually voted on and participated in.
That's VOA's Adam Phillips speaking with Johnny Carson, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, who served as U.S. Ambassador to Uganda, speaking from New York. A series of airstrikes in eastern Syria this week, allegedly by Israel, killed at least 57 people, most of them fighters, according to international monitoring groups. The targets were reportedly Iranian weapons storehouses and fighters. Analysts say that while Israel strikes on Syria are common, the large number of people killed and the timing just days before U.S. President-elect Joe Biden takes office could spark tensions between Israel and Iran and the United States and Iran. Linda Goldstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israel has not claimed responsibility for the airstrikes, which analysts saw as a major operation against Iran's continued efforts to establish a permanent military presence in Syria. Syrian reports said at least 15 sites were targeted and that dozens of people, mostly fighters from Iranian-backed militias, were killed. Retired Brigadier General Asaf Orion is a senior fellow at the Institute for National Security Studies.
This strike, as much as it was conducted by Israel, which is the probable explanation, is in the context of Iran and Israel's long campaign in Syria, and that's, I would say, in a wider scale, Iran's proxy warfare across the Middle East. Because what we're seeing is that the Iranian art of war is based on fighting on other people's lands by other people's hands.
He said what he found unique about these airstrikes were the large scope and the location, 500 kilometers from Israel, near the border between Iraq and Syria. General Orion says Iran is using proxy militias to taunt Israel.
What Iran is doing in Syria is actually putting a military capability on Israel's border, allowing it to attack, harass, distract, divert Israel, and deter it if they could.
The tensions between Israel and Iran come just days before President-elect Joe Biden will be inaugurated. Biden has said he wants the U.S. to return to the Iranian nuclear deal, which President Donald Trump pulled out of in 2018. Israel worries that the deal will give Iran a legal way to acquire a nuclear bomb. But Iran has recently begun enriching uranium to 20%, a step on the way to crossing the nuclear threshold. Israel television security correspondent Roi Sharon says the timing plays an important role. He said Israel is using the last days of the Trump administration to attack Iran because Iran won't want to respond now. But some Israeli analysts say Israel is playing a dangerous game and that if pushed hard enough, Iran will strike back. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Russia says it will withdraw from an international treaty allowing observation flights over military facilities following the U.S. exit from the pact. Russia's foreign ministry said Friday that the U.S. withdrawal from the Open Skies Treaty last year, quote, significantly upended the balance of interests of signatory states, unquote. I think that Moscow's proposal to keep the treaty alive after the U.S. exit have been cold-shouldered by Washington allies. The treaty was intended to build trust between Russia and the West by allowing their courts more than 3,000 signatories to conduct reconnaissance flights over each other's territory to collect information about military forces and activities. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.